Welcome to session 11 in the Practical Ministry Skills course, The Pastor's Authority and Accountability. This is based on chapter 7 of Pastoring the Nuts and Bolts. Our key verse for this session is, you must teach these things and encourage the believers to do them. Paul is writing to his protege, Titus. This is one of the, what are called the pastoral letters, 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. Paul didn't write to churches, he wrote to pastors or ministers, to church leaders. And they have some a wealth of information and advice about how to be a good leader in God's church, a good minister. And so Paul says to Titus, you must teach these things and encourage the believers to do them. You have the authority to correct them when necessary. So don't let anyone disregard what you say. You have the authority as a minister, as a leader of a ministry, local church or any other kind of ministry, you have authority. And a lot of people recognize that, yes, of course, I have authority. That's implicit in having this role. But a lot don't realize there are two kinds of authority. There is what's called positional authority, which is authority that comes because you hold that position. And in some organizations, that is much stronger than in others. In the military, a superior officer has authority over an enlisted person just strictly and only because they have that position. They have positional authority. They may eventually gain the other kind of authority, but it doesn't matter in the military. You've got to do what your positional superior says to do because they have that authority. The church, even though it's often called the army of God, is not the military. And you don't have that kind of authority. There are people who will question your authority even if you are the minister. Like Mrs. Thundermuffin here. Are you questioning my authority again, Mrs. Thundermuffin? And I would say, yeah, it looks like she's questioning his authority. You will find people that will do that. There are people in a church, even good Christians of long standing, who will take ownership of the church, consider it their church, and especially if you come in as a new pastor, a new minister, a new leader of whatever your ministry is, they may grudgingly at first grant you positional authority. But if they think you're getting it wrong, if they think whoever put you there, appointed you or elected you or hired you or whatever, put you in that position, made a mistake, they won't make any bones about it. And they will go around you and they'll try even to undermine you. And we'll deal with those kinds of problems, people, later on in another lecture. But I mentioned the authority that you have because of your position. You start with that and you husband that and you take advantage of that. But you do that in order to have time to build up the other kind of authority. And that is authority that you earn, not that you're given, not that it comes after your title, if you have a title, but authority that you earn because people respect you. And notice I said respect. I didn't say like. Their respect is what will allow you to influence them, and that's what authority is about, influencing people, causing people to do what you believe is the best thing for them to do. I could like somebody and think they're a really nice person, but think they have no idea about what I ought to be doing. I could respect somebody, respect their wisdom and their judgment, and even though I may not personally like their personality, I will be much more inclined to go along with what they say if I respect their judgment and their wisdom and their relationship with God. So you need to work as a leader to get people to respect your wisdom and your good intentions and your integrity and all the other things that will cause them to respect you and therefore to listen and go along with what you are, where you're trying to lead, even if they don't immediately agree with you. Now, it's important to understand that their respect for you is going to be based on their perception of you. It's going to be based on what they know or believe about you, whether or not that's true. In other words, you could be an entirely honest and good person, but if they've heard rumors that suggest the otherwise and they believe them, then you're not going to get the respect that you truly deserve, and vice versa. If you think somebody is a very good, wonderful, God-fearing person, and then you can respect them and listen to them and follow them, even if behind the scenes they are something different. And that's the basis of, unfortunately, of scandals in the church where leaders betray the trust. So don't allow that to happen to you. Honestly earn the respect, but also try to make sure, I mean, you don't have to be constantly out there defending yourself against every little thing. Hopefully, some of those things are going to be so crazy that anybody who really knows you and respects you won't pay any attention to the stuff that the devil will try to throw out there. People will grant you authority in their lives based on how they perceive four things. I've already kind of run over these. Your character. You have to have that character of honesty and integrity and faithfulness and the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. If you are a person of good character, they will respect you. They'll grant you authority in their lives based on your relationship with God, on how they perceive your relationship with God. If they believe that you are a God-fearing person who prays and knows how to hear from God, and you tell them then that you were praying and God led you in this direction, they are likely to grant you authority based on that because of their perception that, yeah, if this person said they heard from God, they did. They will grant you authority based on your relationship with them and their friends. The better you know them, the better they feel like you know them and their friends and understand their situation and are approachable and you have a good relationship, then they're going to be much more likely to grant you authority in their lives. And they will grant you authority and influence in their lives based on their perception of your knowledge and ability. So that doesn't mean constantly be using big words that nobody can understand just to show how educated you are. But you need to gain the knowledge. You need to gain the ability, which is learned through practice and through training. And then the people need to see that in your life. And the more they see that, the more authority they're going to give. If they believe that you are a person of good character who has a good relationship with God and knows how to hear from God, who understands their situation and knows them, and you have knowledge and ability, if they believe all of those things about you, they'll follow you almost anywhere. they will give you tremendous authority to lead the church and their part of it. The more respect you earn, and again the word is earn, the more influence and authority you will have. So, in different denominations and different church setups, the positional authority is different. In some, the some ways of doing church government, the positional authority of the pastor, the minister, is pretty much anything they say goes. In others, it has to be submitted to a committee or a board or the elders or the presbytery or whatever you call it, and be approved. In some, the position carries with it a lot of positional authority in some areas and not a whole lot in others. For instance, in my own denomination that I came out of, the pastor of a church had pretty much unlimited say over the worship, how the worship was conducted, and the use of the building for worship. But the pastor did not have unlimited say over how the money was spent. Spending money, even for worship, because it had to go through and be approved there was as much money available as the pastor wanted to spend. All of that had to go through various levels of committees and things like that. So very often it's broken down like that. But even in those areas where you don't have the positional authority, then the relational influence, respect authority will carry a lot of weight. Now, influence and authority is tested when you try to change things. As long as you're just going along with the way everything is and everybody's happy, then it doesn't matter if you have any influence or authority. But if you believe God is leading you to change something, and other people are not so happy about that change, that's where the influence and authority comes in. But yet, you're not being a leader if you're not changing. If you're just riding the wave along, if you're just following the people to wherever it goes, you're not leading. It's amazing to me how sometimes even the smallest changes are seen as huge in the minds of the people of the church. I remember I went to one church, and after a service, it was early in my time at that church, and again, I come from a denomination where we were appointed around to different churches. I think I served six or seven in my lifetime. I keep having to stop and count them, and I won't take the time to do that right now. But a woman came up to me after the service, and she said, Oh, Pastor, you've changed everything. And I said, what have I changed? And she said, the offering used to be after the sermon, and you put it before it. Now, to me, that was that was tiny, tiny little thing. Didn't matter to me. I don't know exactly why I did it, why I made that change, but it certainly, I didn't consider it a life-changing thing, not even important enough to consult with the worship committee. But for this person, oh my goodness. And I finally figured out, there are people, and I'm not saying this that was the case with this person, but there are people whose only connection with God is the Sunday morning service. And so if a change is made to the Sunday morning service, then you're messing with their connection with God. And that's serious for someone. Whether that's the case or whether it's something else, change makes most people uncomfortable. So if you feel that God is leading your church in a new direction, there are several things you can do to make it easier on everyone. First and foremost, pray. Don't make a change just because you think it's a good idea. Pray about it. Now, it may come, the idea may come in prayers, and you feel like it came straight from God, or the idea may come from a class like this, a conference, just thinking about things, a suggestion somebody makes. But then take it back to God in prayer and get God to confirm it. It's either way, God can initiate it directly to you in prayer or through something that He brings to you some other way. It still can be from God, but don't assume it's from God, especially if you just thought of it on your own or somebody suggested it or you saw it in an advertisement. Bring it to God in prayer. And soak the whole process in prayer all the way through. Next, discuss the idea just informally, offhand, off the record, with somebody you respect. If you're still trying to confirm, is this really God? If it is, exactly how should I go about it? Maybe talk about it with a colleague in another church or another ministry. Instead of, you know, don't bring it right into anybody in your ministry until you're quite, until you're pretty sure that you want to suggest it. But then start discussing it informally with the leaders, the other leaders you trust in your ministry or in your church. Talk about it. Refine it. Even if the idea came from God, that doesn't mean the final form came from God. So discuss it, work it out. God leads people. He wants us to use our heads for those kinds of things, to figure out those details. So work it out. And if you get some agreement from some other important leaders in your church that you trust, you're kind of the people you go to for advice, that it's good, then start laying the groundwork in your sermons, if you're a pastor, or in your talks, in your conversations with other people in the ministry. Start laying the groundwork, maybe not necessarily in terms of a program, but in terms of the biblical principles that would lead to the support of this kind of a program or whatever change you're making. Lay the groundwork in the sermons, and then after a while, when the time is right, present it to the appropriate body in your church, a board of deacons, board of elders, whatever you call the group of people, if there is a group of people that pushes things through, that approves things or encourages things or advises or whatever they do. We'll be getting into that a little bit later, but there is usually a body of people in a church of the other leaders in the ministry. And the ideal thing is if you have done such a great job laying the groundwork that you get together for your meeting and somebody else says, "Hey, minister, I've got an idea. How about if we do this?" And they present the same thing you are going to present. That's perfect. That's great. But of course, if it doesn't happen, and most of the time, frankly, it doesn't, be ready to suggest it yourself if you need to. At the right time, that's a prayerful decision for God to show you. And suggest it as an action proposal. Here's what I propose doing. Here are the steps. Here's how I think it would work. You, as they say, cast the vision. Show them what it would look like once it's in place, and the advantages, the pros and cons. And then suggest that, you know, after there's been discussion and whatever, suggest, well, how about if we just try it as a trial run? Don't immediately suggest a permanent change. Say, let's try this for 6 weeks or 3 months or whatever is an appropriate kind of a time. And see how it works out. People are much more likely to approve something if they feel like they can then go through a process of evaluation and say, no, that didn't work. Let's go back to the way we used to. However you do it, follow your church's or your ministry's decision-making process. Now, expect resistance, not only in that leadership group, but then once it becomes known among the larger body, the congregation or the other people in the ministry, expect some resistance, because different people accept things at different rates. There are the early adopters who get excited about any new idea and say, this is great, let's go for it. And then there are the people who sit back and say, oh, you're going to have to prove this to me. And after 95% of the church or the group has been doing it, and it's been working well for 2 years, they're finally saying, well, maybe. And so you have some people on that end and some people on this end, and then you have a lot of people, I'm not sure if it's exactly a bell curve, but anyway, a lot of people all along the way, different people will adopt it at different stages, at different periods of time as you go through the process. So until people have adopted it, they will resist it. And you need to be prepared for resistance. Don't give up at the first sign of resistance. Don't let your leaders give up. Don't let them say, oh, we can't do this, we might as well drop it because so-and-so doesn't like it. In particular, if there are certain people, there are some people that will try to control the church by threatening to stop giving or threatening to leave. Don't allow the church to be held hostage by those who would threaten to do something destructive to your ministry if they don't get their way. Those are not the kind of people that you want influencing your church. And God is bigger than they are. If they get unhappy and say, well, I'm just going to leave, I will tell you from experience, you're much better off letting them leave instead of begging them to stay and trying to change things, because they won't be happy and they'll just keep talking to their friends and making things worse in that regard. Let them go. Jesus let people go. And if they threaten to stop giving, you should not be in a position where your church is financially responsible, your ministry is financially dependent on one or two sources of giving. As a matter of fact, your ministry is dependent on one source, and that is God. It's not any individual. So if somebody picks up their ball and goes home, God has another ball. God can provide. But also remember that you can't force the church to accept a change, even if the change is from God. Even if the change is from God, you can't force them. To accept it. So if they won't even do a trial run, okay, move on to the next thing. At the end of the trial run, use your church's decision-making process to decide whether to keep going the way it is, whether to make some changes, whether to go back to the old way. In many church polities, as I said, the pastor can't force, the minister can't force the church or the organization to accept a change. But even if you do have the positional authority, forcing an unpopular change is usually a bad idea. If you come up with something that you think the church can pull off if everybody in the church gets behind it and supports it, and then 49% of the people don't like it and they leave, then it's not going to work anyway. They call it a Pyrrhic victory if you won but you lost anyway. There are many sad examples, and I've lived through some, of congregations using their God-given free will to refuse to accept God's new idea. And I say I've lived through them. I believed it was God's new idea. The congregation didn't accept it, and That refusal often marked the beginning of a decline for the church. It definitely in my ministry that has happened. And if it happens to you, don't feel like a failure. Even Jesus couldn't get most of the Pharisees to change their ways. Now, very quickly, I need to hurry on this. Your accountability. Some pastors claim they're only responsible to God. Some ministers believe they're the only ones who can properly hear from God. That's a recipe for trouble. If you don't want to be held accountable, it means you want to do something that you know you shouldn't do. Right? If you don't want anybody to ask about it, it means subconsciously you know you ought not to be doing it, but you want to do it anyway. Nobody in the New Testament church claimed to hear infallibly from God except for Jesus. You had the Old Testament prophets, and you had Jesus. But after Pentecost, after the Holy Spirit came on all the church, nobody, not Peter, not Paul, not James, none of them claimed to hear infallibly from God. Paul writes, we know in part, and we prophesy, or we hear from God, in part. None of us has the whole picture. And because of that, let two or three people prophesy, tell them this is what I heard the Lord saying, and let the others evaluate what is said. So somebody says, God said this to me, okay, then let the others who know how to hear from God evaluate that and weigh it. Paul himself made himself accountable. He went to Jerusalem. He says, I went there because God revealed to me that I should go. God told him to go. While I was there, I met privately with those who considered to be the leaders of the church and shared with them the message I'd been preaching to the Gentiles. I wanted to make sure that we were in agreement for fear that all my efforts had been wasted and I was running the race for nothing. This is the Apostle Paul who wrote so much of the New Testament, saying that he went and made himself accountable to the leaders of the church, the apostles and so on, still in Jerusalem. And the implication of that last sentence, for fear that all my efforts had been wasted and I was running the race for nothing, he was willing to accept their judgment if they told him he was wrong. He made himself accountable to them. A clear line of accountability protects you as well as the church. Because if somebody accuses you of something, and they will, somebody accuses you of something, then if you have a line of accountability, then those to whom you're accountable should be able to say, no, we've been with this person all the way, and the way they've been leading this ministry is right, and they did not do what you're saying they did. Every pastor needs someone who can hold them accountable beyond the people of their own congregation. Every minister, every leader needs someone who can hold them accountable beyond the people that they are responsible for. You need to be responsible to people that you're not responsible for. And of course, if there was actual wrongdoing, it's important that the church has a means of dealing with that. We'll talk about that in another session. We are out of time. I'll see you next time.